E aí?
Ah, that's hot.
And we are live. Hello and welcome, everyone. We are the Godfathers of Podcasting. It is Tuesday, August 30th at 7:01 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as I said, we are broadcasting live right here on GodfathersofPodcasting.com. And in case y'all didn't know, we have been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. As always, archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider: Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, and so many, many more. Wherever you go to get podcasts, that's where we are. You can also get us on your favorite smart speaker, Alexa, Google, whatever you got, we're on that too. Video archives of this show are only available on our website, GodfathersofPodcasting.com, and until further notice, they are free. Speaking of our website, we got really cool merch. Go check it out. Support your boys. You can interact with us right now. Send us a text message, or you can get us on WhatsApp. The number is up on the screen, 437-375-2000. 437-375-2000. If your question, comment, suggestion, whatever you got is good, we will read it on the air. Hello, everyone. This is episode 108. My name is Donnie Da Silva, and it is my extreme pleasure to introduce the chocolate in my peanut butter. This is Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell.
No, we'll not even stand for that kind of a comparison. Thank you very much.
Oh, because you want to be the peanut butter.
Dude, I'm always the peanut butter.
I knew you'd get offended at that. I knew.
Always.
You are such a peanut butter whore. I knew you'd be offended
by
that. You
will never be the peanut butter around me. You'd be lucky to be almond butter around me, right?
Hey, I don't like giving out free plugs to companies that don't pay us, but have you seen the new Kraft peanut butter commercial that's going viral?
No, I have not.
Oh my God. It's really one of the best ads I've seen in a long time. It's like a woman is like surfing online. She's doing online dating. She finds a guy who lives in France. She lives in Toronto. She finds a guy in France. She falls in love. She decides, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to uproot my life. I'm going to move to France. I'm going to start a new life with this guy. I love him. She goes, you see her getting on the airplane, moving to France. She's there with the guy. They passionately kiss. They make out. It's implied that they have sex all night long. She gets up the next morning while he's making coffee, and she goes up to him and goes, "Babe, where do you keep the Kraft peanut butter?" And he goes, "What is Kraft peanut butter?" And the next shot is her on the plane going home to the sound of "It Must Have Been Love, But It's Over Now."
Well, now, you know, that's
a
fitting.
Good ad.
That's fitting. It's a lot better than the commercials or the not commercials, but the videos you see online lately of, like, you know, the person going for the Kraft peanut butter. They pull the thing out, they open it up, and it's got like a big old like dick hole right in the middle of it or whatever. All of these things are acceptable to do with peanut butter. I'm just saying. What is your favorite peanut butter, Donnie?
I'll be honest, I'm not as much of a peanut butter slut as you are.
All right.
But I mean, like, okay, smooth or crunchy?
Yeah, because see, there's the difference, right? Because if you're thinking like chunky, then you're thinking like an Adams or like one of these smaller companies or something like that.
I don't even know,
right?
Adams.
Or if you're going with like, are you going to go with this like crazy mix stuff like Peter Pan, you know what I mean? Or a Goober, you know, the Goober fucking peanut butter? It's like, it was the one. Yeah, man, this was like peanut butter and jelly mixed together. It was like striped.
Oh, I've heard of that. I just didn't know.
Okay. Goober strawberry. So it was just like one scoop, bam, peanut butter and jelly sandwich for those people that didn't have time to put on peanut butter and then jelly. It was all just in one fucking scoop of the knife.
These are the same people my late father made fun of because power windows had to turn into one touch. You were too lazy to hold the power window button down. It needed to be one touch. And then my father said, "This is the fall of society. We're too lazy to hold the power window button.
Could you imagine?
Too lazy to get peanut butter and jam from two separate jars."
Could you imagine how he would freak out if he got into one of those cars that like had the automatic, you know, you get into it once, you set the settings for yourself, and then you get into it and it automatically adjusts the seat for you to your settings?
Bro, you knew my old man. Yeah. And it's not that he was cheap, but he was smart. And when he went into a car dealership, he would be like, "Look, I don't want power windows. I don't want power seats. I don't need a fancy radio. I don't need big speakers. I need a car that's going to take me from one place to another. Whatever baseline model you got, that's me. Stick shift, perfect.
Yeah, that was passed on to you when you were younger too, though. That's the thing, right? Like, then you had to rely on him to come and get you because his actually worked.
As Tid tells the story of one of the very first times he and I were ever on location heading to an interview shoot. What year would that have been? 97?
1897, if I believe.
And Tid and I were on our way to the middle of nowhere in Northern Ontario. And the car I'm driving, which was a hand-me-down from my dad, but I don't think I took very good care of it.
And here we have come full circle, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't think I took I probably didn't change the oil or some shit. And the car broke down in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And this is before we had cell phones, right? We ended up 2 feet in a heartbeat, walking to a payphone, called my old man who was about 2 hours away. He comes to save our asses as we're stranded we missed the gig. We missed the gig entirely, but he took care of everything. That was my dad, man.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Good times right there.
Hey, I want to, a little peek behind the curtain for our audience. Usually in the few minutes leading up to going live, Tid and I will have a quick debrief on what we want to talk about in the first half of the show. And I missed a story, Tid, that I wanted to talk to you about. So I'm throwing this one at you. It's a curveball you weren't expecting, but I don't think you're going to sweat it. Shaquille O'Neal spoke to the press today. The great Shaquille O'Neal, NBA Hall of Famer, one of the 75 greatest players of all time, according to the list that came out earlier this year. Shaquille O'Neal currently believes the earth is flat. And the reason he thinks this is because he flew for 20 consecutive hours and said he never tipped over. He said we never tipped over. And we never went upside down. So how could the world be flat? Or how could the world be round?
Somebody needs to check this big dope for some CTE right away. Holy moly, Shaq, you big dumb dummy. How is it that you keep coming back down to the ground when you jump up? How come you just don't float away?
But do you have 4 championship rings? So shut up.
No, I got one middle finger. It goes like this. You dope. For
Shaq
sake,
added.
Shaq. I don't think he does. Shaq's always, he's a wordy and he's a funny guy. So I think he's trolling. He's goddamn trolling.
He's not that bright. He also added, he's not quite sure that the planet is actually spinning because he can't feel it.
Yo, those things are like Chris Rock would say, they spinning. You know the rest of that. Yeah, no. Wow. They spinning, all right. The earth is a spinning. Leave it up to smarter people. Listen, don't trust scientists to try to shoot free throws. Actually, don't trust Shaq to try to shoot a free throw either. But don't trust a scientist to try to dunk on Shaq. And don't trust Shaq to try to do the scientist's job either. That's what I'm saying. Leave it up to them.
You know what the worst part is? Shaq doesn't even sound smart when he talks about basketball. Even when he talks about basketball, he sounds dumb.
He's hilarious, though. That's the best.
He's funny, but he's sometimes
super funny.
He's often unintentionally funny.
I think that's the funny part. And that's why I think that, like, he's trolls. He trolls a lot. You know what I mean? Like, he gets it. So he clearly trolls a lot. So why not? Why not come out and say stupid shit like this to, look, our dumbasses are talking about him.
Speaking of likes to troll, legendary stand-up comic Chris Rock in the news this week, Tid, because Chris Rock revealed during he revealed in a recent stand-up routine that he has been contacted by the Academy to host the 2023 Oscars. On the surface, this might seem like a good idea to people, right? They had the slap heard around the world from Will Smith. They want to make good. They offer him the opportunity to come back. But Chris Rock is saying in his stand-up, that's like asking Nicole Brown Simpson to go back to the Italian restaurant where she forgot her glasses. He's like, I do not intend to return to the scene of the crime.
Well, he ain't wrong. He is not wrong. I mean, you know, nor should he. Right up to the point to where they're like, we understand the beginnings of your negotiations, Mr. Rock, and we would like to counter that negotiation with, let's start with three Brinks trucks backed up to your door.
More money,
and
more
you
money,
let us
more
know
money.
If we need to bring more. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Chris saying, so, I don't want to return to the scene of the crime. Chris saying he doesn't want to return to the scene of the crime means they didn't offer enough money yet. Right? Because wouldn't everyone tune in?
That's exactly what that means.
Right. You know,
of course they would. And if you start the story now.
I was going to say, Ted, baseball has often in the last few years suffered from. Sorry?
Oh.
What's going on? Are you okay?
Yeah, hello? Are you? I think I might have had an aneurysm.
I think. Hi. You good? You good, bro?
Yeah, you?
Huh? I'm just rolling, baby. I'm just rolling. Live broadcasting, folks. Baseball,
computers were a wonderful thing.
Over the last few years, baseball has definitely suffered from fluctuating ratings. And maybe the answer is what happened last week in Oakland and last night in Toronto. Last week in Oakland, a woman was caught at a baseball game, at an Oakland A's game, giving oral sex to her partner in the stands. Monday night in Toronto, a totally different couple were caught on camera while she was riding him. And they were sitting in the top of the outfield and they got busted. I don't know what happened with the people in Oakland. I know that in Toronto, the couple was escorted out of the Rogers Center by police. No charges were laid. Do you think they should just be airing this and see if it's going to help ratings?
Well, I don't think it's going to help ratings. This is like,
can
real
baseball have
sex.
An R rating?
To watch really, I mean, what I think they're going to have to start doing is they're going to have to start charging extra for those nosebleeds now.
What if you it was the mean? Relief pitchers like, while they're sitting in the bullpen doing nothing? What if they were the ones having sex? Would that be better for ratings?
What if they just be? I don't know. Would you watch?
I mean, yeah.
Is this going to be the new fetish, though? Like getting caught on camera having sex at a sporting event?
You know what the funny thing is? This is not new. Like, this is making headlines right now, and it's harder to get away with these things now because everyone has a camera in their hand. Mm-hmm. But this isn't new. Back in the day when I was a young lad working at TSN, I remember in my first week there working on SportsCenter, I had one of the editors pull me into his editing bay, and he goes, "Want to see something cool? Here's the dirty cut." And he shows me a supercut from across all different sports of couples having sex in the crowd. Because when you're at a professional game, I don't know how it is around the world, but the major sports leagues in North America, there are dozens of cameras in the building. Mm-hmm. They don't miss shit. And that's not including the hundreds of security cameras that are in the building. Okay. And those are not grainy ass cameras like they had back in the day. These are 4K quality cameras. They see everything. So this guy showed me a supercut of stuff. This is going back in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God, people are doing this like nonstop, fucking their brains out all over the building. Mm-hmm. And it's still going on, but now it's a big story because everyone sees it, catches it, and ends up on TMZ.
You have to know that, like, when you're watching the TV and you're watching the game, only one camera at a time is doing the shot. But there's a bunch of these cameras all over because you get all of these different angles. So when they're not shooting from the angle that they're at, do you think that, like, they need the person to stand there, you know, and move the camera around if it's just a stationary shot? No. These guys are hunting B-roll the entire time, you know 100%. What I mean, for stuff, for filler stuff that they can throw to at any given time. So
there are cameras that are literally just searching the crowd for crowd reactions, celebrations, people falling asleep because it's funny. They're looking for anything.
Or people fucking.
Or people fucking. Ted, would you fuck at a game? Would you ever do that?
Not again.
Past or present?
What?
Past or present? Would you ever fuck at a game?
Probably not. Yeah, I don't. I'm not a very.
Not sure I believe you.
PDA kind of guy. You know what I mean?
Then why do you always make out with me in public?
Well, because that's more of a humiliation thing. I'm not sure if you understand how Stockholming works, Donnie.
Speaking of humiliation, will Jake Paul be humiliated, Chris Tidwell? It's just been announced that it looks like Jake Paul's next opponent inside a boxing ring will be UFC legend turned pro boxer Anderson Silva. Jake Paul, of course, of the YouTube famous Paul Brothers. He's the YouTuber turned boxer who really only ever fights non-boxers. He's now facing Anderson Silva, who has a 3-1 record as a pro boxer. Tid, as our pugilist expert, what's your thought on this announcement?
I mean, it's a fantastic announcement, and people are going to eat it up. This is the fight that people were calling for the longest time. If you were Jake Paul and you were going to continue to fight ex-UFC or ex-MMA fighters, Anderson Silva was the obvious choice. For the longest time, they didn't think that this was going to be something they can make happen because of Triller and the contract, blah, 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 blah. But it seems like it's going to happen so far. Who knows with the Jake Paul fight lately? But it is going to happen so far. And here's the thing. You got a guy who's, you know, relatively the same size. He's got a couple inches of reach on a guy like Jake Paul. Anderson Silva is, 47 years old or something like that?
Exactly right. He's 47.
You know what I mean? And Jake Paul's like, 27 or some crazy shit? You know what I mean? Jake Paul is definitely a lot younger. He's definitely going to hit a lot harder. Is Anderson Silva going to be able to do like he did to Tito Ortiz? No, not at all. Not at all. You know, is his last fight even against, who was it, Chavez Jr.? I mean, listen, I mean, in name value alone, you know, Junior didn't even show up ready to fight in that one. It was embarrassing. Even the old man, you know, looked better in his fight on that card. That's how bad it was. So, I mean, Jake Paul's probably going to win this fight.
You think so?
Yeah, you got to put the money down on youth and you know, athleticism. And Anderson Silva has been knocked out. He's been knocked out by a lesser of a punch. We haven't seen that with Jake Paul yet. So, I mean, Jake Paul should be the odds-on favorite for it or whatever. But that doesn't mean if the odds are good enough, throw some money down on Anderson Silva because he's lightning in a bottle every single time, man.
What's the end game here, Tid, for Jake Paul or even Logan Paul? Logan Paul seems to now be in bed with the WWE. And he seems committed to going that route. For Jake Paul, what's his end game, do you think? Continue to do these one-off celebrity fights that he can co-promote and get a big piece of the cake? Do you think that, like he has teased, he really actually wants Dana White to give him a job so he ends up in the UFC making much less money? Do you think that he makes the full-time transition to become a professional boxer and fights other professional boxers? Like, what? Where's he going?
Here's what I think. How right it is, I have no idea. I think that both of those guys have done a very good job since from a very young age to take advantage of opportunities that keep them in the limelight without any real world job, so to speak. So everything, everything is like, everything in life to them is a bucket list. What can I do next? You know what I mean? What is it that I want to do next? You know, and they're really living out their own dreams, and good for them. So is there an end game? I don't know. At this point, I don't know, because, you know, Jake has also hinted that he wants to play football next. Well, he's not going to be able to do that. He's way too old for that. He's also too old to be holding any kind of championships in the world of real professional boxing. So everything that he has right now in these fights is going to be these sideshow fights. He's not going to get any, you know, he doesn't have the experience to get any of those fights, unless he wants to go over to a organization that, you know, has like rotating champion so that he can, you know, become next week's champion so he can add it to his mantle. It's not going to be WBC champion in any weight class. You know what I mean? So it's just bucket list stuff for both of these guys, and good for them. Anybody who doesn't like it is just hating, I think, out of jealousy.
Which Paul brother was it that's supposed to be a really, really good grappler? Is it Jake or Logan?
I thought it was Logan that was supposed to be a really good wrestler. I think that was the reason that he was able to pick up on pro wrestling the way that he is. He gets body movement. He has the rhythm for it. You know what I mean?
He has the rhythm. He has great footwork. And he clearly is a fan, so he understands that whole world. Yeah. Speaking of the WWE, we don't often talk about them on this show, but there is a story that has made headlines this week. And to set the stage for those that don't follow that world, let's back up a little bit. We talked last month about the story of the decade for pro wrestling fans, which was Vince McMahon retiring from professional wrestling amid allegations of paying off different women, different former employees to keep quiet his multiple affairs. So he stepped down. His son-in-law steps in as the head of creative. His daughter steps in as the co-CEO. And while all this has been going on, the new head of creative has been undoing a lot of what Vince McMahon did, rehiring people that were fired for no understandable reason, right? Over the last year or two.
Sure. Yeah.
And people that were favorites of the new head of creative. One of those guys who was a favorite of the new head of creative was a guy named Patrick Clark, aka the Velveteen Dream. Patrick Clark signed with WWE in 2015 after competing on their reality TV show where he was trying to become a professional wrestler. He managed to do that. Clark, after being very successful in the WWE's developmental program, was released from his contract May of 2021 amid allegations that he had been sending sexually explicit DMs to male and female minors. The WWE apparently completed an investigation, as did local authorities. No evidence was found. No charges were laid against Clark. That all being said, Clark was not offered his job back. Over the last month, Patrick Clark has been very public online saying, I was never charged with anything. I was innocent. I want to come back. I want my old job back. And there's been a little bit of an upswell of support for him. Like, hey, he wasn't charged. Bring him back. Well, that may have all come to a halt because Patrick Clark has now been arrested twice in the same week.
Wow.
Patrick Clark was arrested August 20th in Orlando and booked on misdemeanor battery and trespass. And then just 6 days later, Clark was arrested again, this time in Orange County, Florida, where he was apparently booked for an out-of-county warrant for a violation of probation in Orlando. And it seems all of this comes from a previous drug charge we weren't aware of, that I don't even think the WWE was aware of, previous drug charge in Seminole County. So I think it's safe to say, Tid, that Patrick Clark's WWE dream is over.
It's not looking so good. It may be time to wake up from that dream. And let's just say, best case for him, all of these things are found to be not true. But it seems to be a lot of heat coming along with this dude. And
that's
tough for a company to get behind, man. And it's sad for him, too, because he's a hell of a talent. Hell of a talented human being. You know what I mean? Inside that ring. But this business does tend to bring out the worst in some people. And then you also find out that some of the worst people are in this business.
Also, when you're a publicly traded company, you have a responsibility to your shareholders. And bringing in a guy,
1,000,000%,
bringing in a guy who's been on TMZ multiple times in the last week with arrests of battery, trespass, drugs.
That's not why you want to be on TMZ.
Why do you want to be on? Oh, because of the previous story, right? You want to be the guy having sex at the top of the Rogers Center.
No, I think you want to be on TMZ because you're a hero.
Ah, nice transition, Notorious TID Chris Tidwell, because ladies and gentlemen, it is now time for the big hello. And this week's guest is truly a hero without a cape. We told you his story on this show last month, and that was when Tid brought it to my attention. The story of a delivery driver who was out in his car at the end of a shift and saw a house going up in flames. And instead of doing what most people would do, be honest, you would not have done what he did. He didn't go and call for help. He didn't do what most of you out there would have done and just kept on driving and said, "Ooh, that looks bad." He got out of his car. And without any regard for his own safety, he pulled out not one, not two. He pulled out five individuals from a blaze and literally saved their lives. Tid and I have been so excited to talk to this man about that night and what has happened to him since that night. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up for Indiana's Superman. This is Nick Bostick. Dude, what's going on?
Hey, not much. Just got done eating some dinner, to be honest.
What does a superhero eat?
Superhero eats cheeseburgers. Cheeseburgers. Yeah,
damn right he does. Damn right he does.
Yeah, the correct answer is whatever the fuck he wants.
Whatever the fuck he wants, hey.
Dude, we are just... we're in awe of this entire story. I remember last month, as always happens on the day of our show, my co-host here, my brother from another mother, he messages me about stories from around the world, human interest stories, sports stories, entertainment stories, and we decide which ones we like and which ones we're going to talk about. And he shows me this story from Indiana. And I thought, this is real? Come on, this can't be real. Nick, take us back to that night, man. Like, set the scene for us. For anyone out there who hasn't heard the story, set the scene for us and explain for us exactly what you saw when you pulled up, what went through your head, and what possessed you to do what you did.
So when I was driving by, you know, the house was on fire already, and I slammed on my brakes and I spun the steering wheel counterclockwise and then slammed on the throttle and swung it around. And then slammed on the throttle again and then drove it to the drive in the driveway. At that point, you could hear windows starting to bust and crackling was just starting. And I guess I wasn't too worried about the size of the fire because it appeared it was a lot smaller than I guess what it actually was. I guess it was just because I guess I was at a distance, but. Yeah, I was more worried about trying to help. So, being that I just went and got gas, I found out I didn't have my phone on me. So, I didn't waste no time. Yeah, I didn't waste no time to run around the side of the house. What led up to that point was me and my girlfriend. We had a little argument, I guess, you know, and I got upset, so I went out for a drive and got gas, and you know, this is a real story. I know, like, you probably heard, like, I was on a shift, but I think the media, what happened was they were trying to get a hold of, they couldn't get a hold of me and just kind of picked off some, and then they got the story wrong. And then some of the other media, they just kind of went with, you know, what they thought was right. But I'm going to set the story straight so everybody knows the real story. I don't want nothing incorrect there. So it was just a coincidence. I was wearing my work shirt that night, and I went to O'Reilly's, and I'd sat there after I left the gas station. And that's a place, like, I've been going to car meets the past 3 years. So it's a sentimental place to me. I was chilling there about 15 minutes or so, and I went home and seen the fire. And I did all that, and I was going around the side of the house, and I went to the back door, and I opened it, and I was hanging halfway in it, and I was hollering, "Your house is on fire, hey, hey," and I was screaming at the top of my lungs. At that point, I couldn't see no fire. The house looked like a normal house. There was lights on the first floor, so it looked like somebody had been there pretty recent. So I went ahead and just went into the house, and I went and I was running through, and the way the first floor is, if you can like imagine how like drawing the sun, okay, you do an arc, right? And then you have like little lines coming off of it. Well, like imagine the arc being the walkway through the house from the back door, from the east side of the house to the center of the house to the west side of the house, right? And then like, yeah. Each one of those little things are the rooms, you know, there's a living room in the center. And then, okay. So gotta catch my breath. So anyways, I was looking in all those rooms as I'm going through the hallway, and I end up discovering these stairs, the staircase, and I'm hollering up the stairs, and there's only a light on up in the staircase. And as I'm hollering, like, I look back and like, I see smoke creeping in from the living room, which was on the north side of the house. That was the side of the house that was on fire where it started at. And right above the living room was the room that all the girls were sleeping in, and that it came out from me yelling. So like I said, as I was looking over, there was smoke pouring in from the ceiling, and I turned back and I went to go up the stairs to check the rooms, and I met the kids at like two steps up the staircase. They came running out of the doorway. They opened up the bedroom door they were in at the top and came out at the same time. The 18-year-old was holding the baby, the 2-year-old, and then the two 14 or 13-year-olds. One was part of the family, and then the other was a friend that was staying the night over. So they all came out at the same time from that bedroom, and I'm doing like the air guitar thing with my arms, to tell them to come down, just get out. And we all run through the house. And as we're running through, I'm seeing like the curtains are on fire. The drapes are on fire. Everything's melting like liquid. Wow. The house is, the fire spread it to like, it's like a, Dante's Inferno, like a tunnel of fire. But it wasn't a tunnel, but like where the chimney would have been, it was just as thick, and it just looked like a chimney that was straight on fire. That was leading up to where the bedroom was. And so we were running past those rooms, and we get to the back door, and we get out, and I ask them if there's anybody left in the house, and they said there was a baby left in there. So I run back around to the staircase and go up to the top room. They came out, and I searched in there three different times. And I checked the other two bedrooms up there, without any success. I mean, so at that point, when I was up there in that room they were sleeping in, there still wasn't no smoke. There still wasn't no fire. It looked just normal, but you could see the fire outside of the window though. That was probably the scariest part. Well, one of the scariest parts for him, just, you know, waking up and seeing that out there. It's crazy as shit, man. What's up?
a whole bunch of follow-up questions come to mind, dude. So many. And first of all, I can tell that this is not easy for you to discuss. It's still emotional, obviously, with good reason. However, Tid, I want to point out, I think Nick may have accidentally revealed how he had the courage to do this, because he mentioned that he had just had a fight with his girlfriend. I'm guessing the girlfriend said, "Nick, you're so selfish. You never do anything for anyone." He's like, "I'll show you." Right, he goes out and he finds five people and saves them. I'm not selfish.
Or he said, Or he said, "I'll show this bitch. I'll show her." And he found a building that was already on fire, and he was like, "I'm just gonna run into it." That's what happened, right?
No.
Wow.
Okay, Nick, let's be serious for a second, though. Please. Going back, because we're just being dicks, and your lovely girlfriend, who I think is driving right now, is probably sick of our business already, and that's fine.
She's smiling, she's cracking up. Hit her with more. Let's go.
But Nick, at any point when this is going on, dude.
Yeah.
There's been time. I've never done anything like what you did, but I've done things like, I see someone who's getting picked on, and then I'll jump in and be like, "All right, this person needs backup." And then next thing you know, that crew has way more people, and I'm like, "Oh fuck, what did I just get myself into?" You know? And then at that one moment, you start to go, "This sounded like a good idea at the time, and maybe now not such a good idea." At any point when this was happening, did you think to yourself, this is it? This is how I'm going to go?"
Yeah. And before I get on that, I want to just say one thing. There's two differences in the examples you brought up, Layla. One is you're doing a kind thing, and the other is you're risking your life doing a kind thing.
100%. Okay? Yeah.
So either or, what matters is doing a kind thing. Okay. What I did, risking my life, that's what I'd already made that decision that's what my life was worth. You know, I'd be willing to give my life up for the next, even one person, rather than, like, I don't know. I'm just like, I don't know how to say it, but I do. It's the opposite of selfishness. You know, I'll sacrifice myself for others, even if it is just only one person. Like, I already had my mind made up that that's what I was going to do if that kind of thing ever came up. You know, like, if I'd already, you know, so I didn't have to waste that time spend that time to think about it. You know what I mean? When that situation arise. So that saved me time in the end anyways. But that's just who I am. You know, I value people's lives more than mine. That's how I've always done it. And I was aware I had a kid on the way that night, and I don't expect everybody to be like me, but as you know, like an organ donor, you know, my driver license, I had my mind made up when I was 14 or 15, when I got my license, I was going to be an organ donor if I ever perished for some reason. Okay. Well, it's the same feeling, same way I feel about this, you know, sacrificing myself for the greater, for whatever. What's up?
Tid.
I was just going to say, like, were you raised a Christian boy, Nick?
No. Well, yeah. I was raised a Christian, but I wasn't raised going to church.
Sure.
Consistently.
There's a difference. And that's why I said, I didn't say, like, were you raised in the Catholic Church, or were you raised a Christian boy? Right. Because it sounds like these are clearly values that were passed on to you from somebody. You know what I mean? Like, you were raised a certain way to put others' feelings, to put my others' father. Lives. And was your grandfather, was it?
My dad, Gary Bostick.
Okay, there you go. So there's clearly somebody that deserved a shout out in all of this that made you the man that you are today. You know what I mean? So props to him. Props to him for that. Absolutely. Yeah. since then, you went on a tear. Like, the media obviously got a hold of this, TMZ picked it up, you know, that's where I saw it myself, and I was blown away by it. And then you had all of these other news agencies, you know, picking up on it.
Good Morning America, Fox News, like, this dude was everywhere,
right? And here's something that I don't want to see happen from this. I don't want to see you lose your 15 minutes of fame.
No.
You know what I mean? This is something that I think people need to be reminded of on a constant basis. I think that the town that you live in should be giving you a key to the city. Has there been any kind of, you know, word? Has the did the mayor at least call you from the city? You know what I mean? Did you get out?
Did you win? Did you win Employee of the Month? Because if not, who did?
Did you get out of the park? Did you get out of every parking ticket that you ever got ever?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What kind, like any perks whatsoever passed your way?
So, I definitely made it a rule myself to not take advantage. Layla, stop. To not take advantage or over. Then let me step out real quick because my dog sees her dog.
The dog's like, get free shit.
Yeah, we just got here. I just got back to the place. But yeah, let me get into this.
Sure.
So, key to the city. No, I've been given some stuff, some coins called challenge coins.
Okay.
And I've had a friend that I showed them to be like, you play, you know, those are really cool for some certain instances. You know, you can get out of, if you're ever speeding and they pull you over, you can you pull out, you know, and get away with it. And, you know, even if that is true, I don't believe in that. And I don't think it's fair for me to, even if I have that privilege.
Sure.
I don't think it's fair for me to use that because nobody else can, you know.
But
it, so.
But it's cool to have, it's cool to have the trinket. You know what I mean? Because what you, it comes with a great story. You know, somebody comes over 10, 20 years from now to your place when you're sitting around your house and they're like, what is this? What is this little thing here, Nick? And then you got to tell the story about it. You know, like this thing here is worth a lot more than you can imagine. This thing can get you out of all kinds of trouble, but this thing here should never be used. This thing should only be looked at, only be cherished, never used, because if it's used, that means that you fucked up somewhere along the line.
Right? All yeah. I know is the Colts and the Pacers should be giving this guy season's tickets, and you should never pay for another meal in Indiana again. That's what I know. And you're a humble guy, and you're a very down to earth guy. Has anyone contacted you, dude, at this point? I mean, like all the talk online was, oh, they're going to make a movie about his life. And I think this would be a tough movie to make because it's basically one scene.
But it'd be multiple movies. It'd be like part one, part two or some shit. You know, I swear, honest to God, it would be that big because it would be there's so many. You couldn't put how many plot twists and how many climaxes there would be in this. Even in just 1 year, you know, it would be interesting.
Who would play you? Who would play you, Nick? Who would play you in the movie?
Hopefully me.
aspiring actor.
I want that. Yeah,
I love, that was a dream, possible dream. Like I thought of doing one day. I just thought it'd be impossible, you know, to, I thought it'd be almost impossible as being like, a rapper or coming up as a NFL player or something, you know, those chances and that. I would love to be an actor. That'd be pretty cool. I'd need practice, but I'd love to be in movies and stuff.
That'd has be anyone, really cool. Has anyone reached out to you about putting your story on the big screen or small screen?
It was a book so far. Yeah. There's this, this lady.
Book deal's good. Book deal can lead to a movie, bro.
Yeah, there's she claims there's a few great seller artists working with her on it as giving her advice and stuff, and I've been getting talking to her and giving her answers and stuff. Yeah,
jump on that. Jump on that, dude. Don't be humble. Jump on that. I want to ask you, I know I saw a whole bunch of media that you did immediately following the incident, and at the time you were talking about some severe blistering and burns that you had received. I think you had like a big laceration or something. At this stage now, we're about a month from the incident. How are your injuries? How have you managed to recover? And do you know, have you been in touch with the family that you went in there, and how are they doing?
Yeah. So I'm going to start with the one that I'll probably forget first. I've been in touch with the family, and I just talked to them today about some property. I was asking them for some advice on some stuff. And I talked to them yesterday. I went to church with them last Sunday. And I keep in touch with them on a regular basis. They've gotten kind of busy, though, and so have I. That, you know, he's been him, David being the principal or vice principal, and they have, you know, a lot of kids, so they have a pretty busy schedule already. But I mean, me, I've always kind of been a recluse. I kind of just had to grow into a recluse, and it's just kind of what I'm accustomed to. And I think they understand and respect that and know that it's not no, like, nothing against them personal. I love them. I'm just around, you know, I'm just at my place. I'm, you know, that's where I'm at. I'm at home.
They got to set a tape. They got to set a place for you at Thanksgiving every year, whether you're coming or not. There has to be a chair for you every year.
Definitely. I would be trying to come because, I mean, I got my girlfriend's family, my mom, you know, she's getting of age up there, and, you know, I want to spend time with her before I end up having too old of a son or a daughter that I ain't able to make time for, you know, I mean, time runs out to make time for that. So, you know what I mean?
And your injuries, Nick, how are you healing?
Great. Hopefully it's not too dark, but so this one's the last one right here, that scab right here. And that's just cause of, I wasn't taking the best care of it at the end. I thought I was good to go, but then it got a little infected again, but, I got it fixed this time and it's about done. There's the giant one right there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this one's real gnarly right here. I can flip the camera, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to mess with it.
It's all good, man. Listen, I have spoken to a few friends that are firefighters, and they do what you did for a living, but they do it covered in gear and safety equipment and training. And they talk about what you did as being freakish. They talk about what you did in terms of the horrible visibility in that fire. They talk about what you did in terms of the inability to breathe. They talk about what you did in terms of just managing your own emotions in that moment. And they almost find it impossible to believe. And dude, what you did cannot be understated. And if you ever make your way from Indiana north to Toronto, dinner is on us, my man.
Hey, dude, I'm just speechless, man. I still don't even know how to respond to that stuff. I don't think it's impossible. I'd be saying I was prepared. You know, I was prepared to lay my life down, despite I wouldn't even say I'd be sacrificing it because it'd be all, I don't know, it'd be all in good faith. Like, my kid would grow up knowing dad went down doing a good thing and why he went down. I'm sure he'd probably want to follow him, or she would want to follow my footsteps if that situation ever came, and they would, you know, they'd understand that that's just who dad was, you know.
When are you and your partner expecting?
February 8th.
Well, we will check in with you on February 9th, my man, and make sure everything went well.
Absolutely.
Listen, thank dude, you. Congratulations. All the best. What is your girlfriend's name, by the way?
Kara Lewis.
Kara, listen,
have you picked out a name yet, or do you know if it's a boy or a girl?
Don't know if it's a boy or girl yet. We're going to wait on the gender reveal. We're going to have a gender reveal at O'Reilly's here. Well, I won't say it out loud, but yeah, here in town, and I'm going to get some of those pink or blue smoke tires, and I'm going to have them put on by somebody that'll know, and I'm going to get me and two other people in his vehicles, and we're all three going to roast them, and that's going to be the gender reveal. Amazing. And I don't know if there's another question, man. I get to talking, hey, and
it's, man, all good. You're doing gender reveal parties Fast and the Furious style. I love it.
Amen, brother.
I love that. Listen, dude. You got to let your girl know. You got to let your girlfriend know from us, from Tid and I, she is never allowed to start another fight with you again, ever.
Right.
You have life immunity, bro. Even if you want to defer all the praise, if you want to defer all the adulation, she can never fight with you again. You have a lifelong pass, bro.
Absolutely.
Nick Bostic, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight on the Godfathers of Podcasting, my man.
Thanks, bro. Thanks for having me on time. Nice meeting you, Mr. Chris and Mr. Donnie. Godfather Donnie, Notorious T.I.D.
It's really good, my man.
Bro, Ill Dutch. Nice to meet on, man.
Have a good one, brother.
You too. Bye.
All right. There goes Nick. Unbelievable story, man. Unreal. Yeah,
I think his humility is understated. And
crazy,
I think
right?
It's a gift that he should get comfortable with passing on to other people. He could be speaking to kids about, you know, just being a good person. He could, like, he's
got, makes me feel like there. A shitty human.
But you are, though. You are you. A shitty human, though. That's
if I'm shitty, what are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm doing great.
That's a rib.
You got that right.
Folks, mm-hmm. I want to thank each and every one of you for hanging out with us tonight. It's been a very busy week. Thanks to Nick for hanging out with us. Tid, you have any parting shots or anything you want to touch on before we wrap up?
Yeah, I do, actually, very quickly. We did a show a while ago, right?
Yes, sir.
Where we had on our good All friends the from the guys over at Incredible Eat.
Oh yeah, Incredible Eats, the guys that were on Shark Tank. They're wicked.
Absolutely. Well, it just so happens that in communications with them, there was an issue with them trying to get stuff to Canada, blah blah blah.
They were gonna ship us a bunch of products. I didn't get anything. Why did you get everything?
Because shit rolls downhill, son.
Okay, so what did they send you? Let me see.
So it's we got,
because I want one of everything.
We've got some edible spoons, plain flavor, if you will.
If you guys missed this episode,
I gotta say the packaging on this is impeccable. 100% impeccable.
Edible cutlery, guys, in case you missed it.
Edible spork vanilla flavored. Okay.
Right.
We have an edible spork oregano chili flavored.
All right. Perfect with your tomato soup, right?
All right, 100%. And we have an edible spork black pepper flavored.
Okay. Salads, maybe?
I'll tell you this, Donnie. I had it with one of my afternoon meals that was ground turkey and rice, and I had one of these edible sporks. And the nice thing is, check this out. You go in there.
Show me.
Individual packages.
Nice. How do they hold up packages? Though? Like Dinesh, when he was on the show, Dinesh mm-hmm. said, you know, they stand the test. They won't melt away. They're not like paper straws.
Nope.
How do they hold up?
The spork that I used with my meal, I made the mistake of trying to stir it up from the top of the spoon. So the tip of the top came off. No problem. It's a fairly long utensil to begin with. Right. Okay. And then it was easy. And then it's just like a regular spoon for me. Right. And I used it. It held up through the entire meal. No problem. And then tasted great afterwards. So I commend them. And also in this package, Donnie, the edible straw.
As I sit here with my iced coffee and a bullshit paper straw that is melted. Look at this.
All right.
This shit is garbage.
This is fantastic. The packaging is unreal. The product is tasty. The product says something. Every one of these boxes has some little kind of saying, like this one for the, what is it here? The plain flavor edible spoon. They've all got something different on the top. This one is, great white sharks can have a lifespan as long as 70 years or more. This makes them one of the longest living species of their class of animals. You know what I mean? Every single one of them has a nice little message. The group name for jellyfish is a smack.
I want to smack you with some jellyfish.
So it's very cool. It's very cool. It reminds me of, like, remember you used to get those little tidbits of information on Snapple every once in a while.
Right.
So I'm very impressed with it. I think that they've done a fantastic job. I can't wait to try the rest of them, you know, and see how they hold up. But so far, the one that I have used today, because, you know, I was like, well, they're here. I got to use one. I need to eat. So there it was.
It
worked out quite well. It's fantastic. They're If you're in the States, go there, pick them up.
They're still working, right, on their shipping to Canada.
Absolutely. Yep. And they will let us know as soon as that is figured out.
Yes. Dinesh and the gentleman that was handling his logistics said that As soon as they get their Canadian shipping sorted out, they will let us know and we will share it with all of you. But for our American audience out there, feel free to place your orders now. Incredible Eats, sporks, spoons, straws, flavored. They got it all.
Flavored. So
flavored.
Cool. And they hold
biodegradable, edible.
Bullshit. Yeah.
Right. And they taste good. That's and what I do. Noticed on Shark Tank. Everyone put over how good they taste.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I can't wait to get some. Dude, thanks so much. Episode 108 is in the books. On behalf of my man, Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell, my name is Donnie Da Silva. This has been the Godfathers of Podcasting. Thank you for hanging out with us, and we'll see you next time.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Peace.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. No thanks. Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. All right, then. I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Yeah.